Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Nick Begich. You've heard what we've been talking about, so we'll do that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are back with Nick Begich, your phone calls as well. Nick, as you look at everything that's been going on this planet over the last few years, what do you think the goal is? What's their mission?
Well, I mean, it's not getting caught.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, I mean, just sorry about that, George, but I mean, really, I mean, think about it. What has happened has been systematically dismantled in terms of the economy. If you think about how deregulation came about through, again, special interest lobbying, that led to first the SNL failures. That was the first $1 trillion bank robbery. You know, people forgot about that one. Then we allowed, you know, more deregulation, and then the way in which these bundles of subprime mortgages were bundled up and sold as AAA securities and rated as such. So insurance, not just the investors, the high-risk role takers, but then pension funds and funds that normally would not be allowed to invest in speculative investment were tied up in these really speculative investments that just were, you know, then they were leveraged in different ways, in really ridiculous ways. You know, capital went from like 1-to-8 ratios to 1-to-35 and unrestricted with these investment bankers and unregulated. And that's what led to the economic collapse, was greed central transferring the wealth through games through regulation. And, you know, things that were fought for to avoid this problem after the Great Depression were unraveled in the course of deregulation. And there's a balance. You know, overregulation is a problem, but underregulation is too, especially when the people driving the process, again, getting back to the politics again, are corporations that can afford the lobbyists and the teams that make change in Washington. And it's making change at a really big dollar price for the rest of us.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's go to east of the Rockies. Dottie in Maple Shade, New Jersey. Hi, Dottie.
Hi. I wish you both well this morning.
You too.
Nick, I think I've spoken with you once before. Here in New Jersey, we have the Aegis program. Very painful for me. And they've recently gotten a contract to upgrade the system to make it stronger, which they're doing. It is unbearable, painful. Put your body into a seizure. Half your body goes numb and you can't walk, and then you hear a big pitch change and you can walk again. They're using sound. They're using electromagnetics. It's just unbearable. And by my listening to you tonight, it seemed you're more benign about all that now.
Well, no, you know, in the sense of it going on, you know, the problem is there's a lot of variety in what's happening right now. I mean, a lot of things affect people a lot of different ways. And when you're talking about, in some cases, hypersensitivity electromagnetic fields, that is really difficult for people, like other disorders and other diseases are. And the fact that electromagnetic fields have this effect, I'm not benign about it at all. I think the fact that we need the regulation of these industries. We need greater understanding, but more importantly, turning it around, because the same energies that are used to disrupt human life, either accidentally or purposefully, are the very same that can solve the problems that we're all facing in terms of human health. And I mean, that's where the real excitement is. If you look at some of the stuff going on in Europe, dealing with cancer therapies and other therapies that are working, that are energy-based, it's pretty interesting stuff. And even our understanding of the fundamentals of some of that in the more ancient traditional forms, whether it be acupuncture or other modalities. In fact, all those things, I think, start to come into play when you talk about really getting a better grip on what we're doing. And so you're affected by one system. There's a lot of systems out there affecting people in a deleterious way. And if you look at cancer rates, stress-related illnesses, psychological disorders, and every other symptom of stress, you see it throughout our so-called modern societies. And as soon as you move out of urbanized areas, in most cases, that decreases because you get away from all of these additional stressors that we normally don't even notice.
Well, I don't want to take up a lot of time, but we tried to do that. Two of us that were affected drove across the United States and did not find a place that was free of it.
Yeah, well, some people are hypersensitive and
I don't buy that because I really don't. If we're hypersensitive, it's because we've been bombarded.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
Because a lot of people say that, oh, gee, and then the next 5 minutes they're complaining about the same pains and the same situations, but they can't hear it. We can hear it. I can see the beams. The beams are light lavender. There's big surges of a purple color on the road. Like, what the heck is all this? And I can't get any help from the normal channels.
Well, I can't.
Yeah, I know you can't answer to those, but I'm just wanting to bring them out. I want people to be aware of that and look for it in their own places, in their own neighborhoods. If you're driving at night, look for the big purple surges down the sides of the road. I can see the purple beams coming down from the sky. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. The military is really out of control. And I just have one question, and I appreciate you listening to me. One question, you had gotten a committee. The president had a committee to find out about people that are being tortured in this manner, whether on purpose or, you know, benignly. How's that coming?
I'm unaware of what's happening in that arena at this time. I don't know of that. So if you have information on it, send it to me, please. My website's out there. It's hooked on to George's Tonight at Coast to Coast AM. And send me the information. I'd find it useful, and I certainly would look into it.
Nick, the electronic signals that people are constantly being bombarded with.
Yeah.
It's got to be affecting people in a drastic way, don't you think?
Well, and I think it does. In fact, you know, just thinking about some of the things that my colleagues have commented on in the past, and particularly cancer rates. And when you think about that, and you think about the underlying causes, not just food and chemistry, but also contributing to that are electromagnetic field effects in terms of stressors. If you think about just general stress-related disorders. And I'll tell you, one of the ways that we noticed, you tried to use this illustration in Germany, it didn't work, because they never have power failures apparently over there. But here in the U.S., we can identify with when the power grid shuts down. Everybody knows how quiet it gets, because the air conditioners and refrigerators all stop running and the computers aren't humming. But if people stop for a second, they also feel this sense of exhale. Their whole body sort of relaxes, because you're no longer compensating for these external fields. It's like being born into the sound of an explosion. You know, you don't hear it anymore. You're in the middle of it. But when it shuts down, you notice its absence as your body sort of relaxes again. But that underlying stress affects your entire living system, the way you index that stress, the way you blanket out, the way you filter it out, like background noise in a crowded room. And that's where we start to sort of lose touch or start to build this shell around ourselves, you know, in the sense of really mediating it. And then we enhance the stress by fear and worry. And then we're not in a good situation either to stay healthy or to make the kind of intellectual and creative decisions that take us to the next place.
All right. Next up, we go west of the Rockies. John in Sedona, Arizona. Go ahead, John. Thank you.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I was listening to a show that I think George Knapp was doing about Whitley Strieber talking about his book, The Key. And in that book, he talked about the next evolution being sort of the man-machine interface, where smarter and smarter computers and manipulation of these energies would really get us where we need to go. And I was thinking about your comment, Nick, about the positive side of all this and how we really need to switch gears and look outside more. And my question, I guess, is how do we focus people's attention on that and get that little snowball rolling?
Well, here we are. You know, we're having this conversation. I think it's a good place to start. And it's always been, you know, my place has been public education. And when I think about now, I don't necessarily agree on the machine replacing a human consciousness, because I think, again, it's sort of a reflection of human consciousness, because the human brain, if you consider its capacity as a supercomputer, if you will, it has way more capacity than any machine we've got going. That I can tell you absolutely. But what it accesses maybe is even more powerful than that. So the machines are kind of the metaphor for sort of what is already happening. I think the evolution is humans using the hardware we already have. That's the real story. And the rest is sort of the reflection of that. And it is the way humans create and the way we create our reality. And when we think about all that, I mean, think about the what differentiated the anomalous creative people in the world. And it was very little, you know, when you get right down to it. In fact, probably nothing. All of us have that same potential latent within us if we can just sort of activate it. And the way it's activated is by deliberately doing something. And this is the whole thing. You know, in my view, I look back on the last 16 years of reporting on technology and science issues. And, you know, how does it start? How does it end? It starts with the first step, and every one of us take one. And let's see what happens when a million people do that. And it doesn't have to be more than that. Just do what you can do about the things you do care about. And in technology areas, take time to learn a little bit more, because technology determines to so much extent what happens in the future. I mean, think of what are the most powerful governments in the world. It's those who have control and command of technology, which means in these democratic republics, in the places we live where we should be driving the policy decisions, we have to have a conceptual knowledge of what these technologies can do. And then we need to think about, do we want to be a half machine in the head, or do we recognize that the machine we have in the head might be able to be better activated with
exactly.
our own control instead of government's control on it. And that I think would be a good move.
Speaking of governments, where do we stand with this kind of control, this kind of technology compared to other countries?
Well, here's where my big concern is, I'll tell you, is with China. And where they are in the spread of knowledge is pretty high up on the chain now, because they've been buying up technology companies around the world and stealing whatever they could whenever they can. And at the same time, building up a huge productive capacity on the talent and innovation of the West and basically ripping it off. I mean, that's what's going on in China, for anybody who's paying attention. But the other thing you get in China, you know, when they spend research dollars, now think about a centralized government with a billion people to draw on. And you get to pick out all the really brilliant guys and young women and orient them towards a specific national interest, whether it be military or whatever. And then you combine that now with 10 cents on the dollar labor, and you start to think about them spending $60 billion, and we kind of laugh about it in the West. But the productive output of $60 billion in China is $600 billion in the West, because we're doing very expensive government projects in the West to produce a ship versus, say, a ship produced in China. And so when you start to think of high technologies like we're talking about, the Chinese intellectual pool is, you know, way bigger than the U.S. intellectual pool, just raw numbers. In terms of talent and applied technology and advanced science, they are right along with us anymore, or ahead in some areas. And I would suggest that any country is capable, even the smallest, of coming up with the next innovation that allows them to assert that kind of control. When you think of mind control technologies, you know, think about the ultimate hack on the West. Wouldn't that be it? You know, forget the hardware and the computers. Hack right in and influence the populations in various ways. That, to me, as the science advances, and it's, you know, this is science. I mean, The Economist had a front page story in 2002 on the ethics of mind control. You know, it was their cover story. And, you know, you start to think about the ethics of all this and how it plays out in the long run. The debate needs to happen now, because science is here now. And that requires us to sort of step into this and start making these sort of forward-looking ideas, but recognizing they're not very far out there. They're right here now.
Okay, next up, let's go to Eli in Ontario, California. Hi, Eli.
Hey, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Okay.
Good. First time caller. Love your show.
Thanks.
My big question is about the mind control thing. Would you think a lot of that is in the popular media today, like in music and movies? Because I've noticed a lot of the music and how much the kids have been changing ever since a lot of these movies like Twilight came out, or performers like Lady Gaga and stuff like that. I've noticed the youth has just made dramatic changes from when I was a kid.
Well, here's what I can say about that is, firstly, certainly technology's out to do this, but I would suggest every generation feels exactly the same way. in terms of the one that comes after us. But at the same time, when I think about what is applied to music, what does make a hit, what does, you know, make things work, if you apply, and see even the masters, if you go back to the masters in terms of some of the great composers, if you look at what happens in the sequencing of sound, and Eastern Europeans looked at this back years and years ago, you get a frequency following response, where you get a change in brain activity that can be followed and is consistent across people. And so even the very structures of good classical music can create an emotion. I mean, that's the beauty of music, right? So if you just acknowledge that basic premise and then extend it out to all the other kinds of music there is, you're going to create emotional effect. No doubt about it. That's the whole thing. That's why we, as humans, are gravitating towards music, for that emotional effect and the brain chemistry that comes from it.
That's a good point. All right. Thanks for that call, Eli. Let's go next to Marguerite in Mesa, Arizona. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, George, for taking my call. First-time caller. Fascinating and very broad topic. I am calling with a question. You had talked about us seeing this information in terms of mind control and possibly telepathy and some of these things occurring 20 years from now. But I have a question concerning indigenous tribes, such as the Aboriginal tribes that already use this to connect other tribes and don't even have stars or things like that for orientation. Isn't this something old that we're just now seeing in terms of government control and where it can go?
Hey, I appreciate that question, because here's what also happens. I think all of the traditions understood this underlying energy. And in fact, I can do a couple illustrations of that, but the main point is, when you clutter the environment with the current energy fields, radio frequency, just as a little part of that spectrum, is 200 million times more radio frequency energy surrounds every one of us right now than did a little over 100 years ago, before man introduced the artificial forms of radio frequency energy. If you think about that, again, is background noise interfering with our natural sense of what's around us, you know, being interference, it would explain a lot. But then go back 5,000 years to the discovery of the Iceman in the northern part of Italy or southern Germany, depending on whose argument you want to accept. But the point is, they found this guy, they looked at his tattoos, and they said, hey, this guy is tattooed in these locations that follow these acupuncture points and meridians. And then they did an autopsy, and his ailments lined up with that, you know, in terms of treatment. And so there was all this speculation about how, you know, but then Chinese acupuncture was thought to be only 3,000 years ago. So there's a big debate about how did it get from where to who. And there is no debate, in my opinion. In my opinion, I want to say that loudly, because I think shaman, or those gifted people that could sense those energy fields around others, you know, did it universally, and they isolated the same things. You know, today you can isolate the acupuncture points with an instrument that measures skin resistance that'll tell you exactly where it is based on a difference in energy on the surface of the skin. Now, the human instrument is more sensitive, and maybe some people are very sensitive without the background noise. And even in today's world, as you say, there are those that can filter out the background noise and make these things work. And I think that's, again, gets back to this root sort of idea that we all have this fundamental underlying energy that drives our systems. And understanding how to utilize that ourselves is a big part of it. And the other part is how our technology might trigger some of it.
Stay with us, Nick. We're going to come back with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, what's it like to defend one of America's worst serial killers? That'll be our next program on Coast to Coast AM. The serial killer, John Wayne Gacy. When we come back with Nick Begich, we'll take our final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Nick, can anybody drive up to the gates at HARP in Alaska and get a tour? Or they let you in?
No more tours. No, in fact, if you might remember, Jesse Ventura did that first lead program.
With you.
Yeah, and it was on HARP, and he went to the gate. They wouldn't even let him in, let anybody in. In fact, Spiegel TV from Germany, the most prestigious network in Germany, they couldn't even get in, and that was 7-8 years ago. But what happened is it went from this sort of Well, drop on by every year for the open house to, well, let's do an open house every other year and let's not announce it very loud. And so they still do that every other year, but it's pretty much localized. It's like high school kids come over and they don't really let the media know much in advance. And they're not as cooperative as they used to be, or at least seemingly so. And part of that was, I can tell you, is media was smarter than they thought. And we made sure that at least people we cooperated with, BBC, CBC in Canada particularly, and made sure they had good information in advance, had time to analyze it and formulate their questions. And they did a really nice job of drawing these projects out and getting some stuff in the open. And they caught the military. And the one guy who was a guy who was their sort of publicist, a guy named out of Hanscom Air Force Base, his situation, he just kept getting caught, you know?
Yeah.
And he had distributed this technical memorandum I mentioned during one of the hours, and it was 600 pages long, and it laid out all the stuff, you know, in terms of what they were doing and where they were headed. And it's their document, and he was the guy that distributed it to all the participants. And he denied knowing anything about it. But when he was confronted on the television interview, which is where the first time he knew we had it, was when CBC TV confronted him, and the guy just turned into a pretzel. You know, I mean, his whole body just kind of caved in, and he just shook his head and said, I don't know anything about it. You know, and it's like, hey, you know, your name is the guy that distributed it. You know, and it just caught him so flat-footed. And then they really backed off of the interviews and a lot of things after that. And that's, you know, but that's all right, because there was enough in the record by that point, and there has been enough in the record to at least get the political bodies of Europe to start to look at this.
Are there armed people at the gates there at HAARP?
You know, I don't recall that. I haven't, you know, I have not been there, I have to say, in a few years, but I don't recall them ever having armed security so much. But these days, you know, I have no clue. I know that when Ventura's team was confronted, I think they had private security there, and that's pretty traditional for these kinds of facilities. They're pretty remote, and they operate in campaigns, but because it's gotten so much publicity, there is security there.
All right, let's wrap up with some final calls here. Jeff is in Oxford, Mississippi, and he's up. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, George. First of all, I want to thank you and Tommy for playing my song Plastic People during the Emerging Artist segment.
Oh, was that you? Okay, super.
That was me.
Nice
thank
job.
You. I didn't know it was coming, and you just about knocked me off my couch. And my website, I didn't know it was coming, so the website wasn't quite ready. If anybody, any listeners that visited the site during the show last night, I'd like to re-invite them to follow the links back to the site. I've got links to iTunes and YouTube and all kind of good stuff.
Super.
I really appreciate the show tonight, especially with Nick saying, you know, you guys have this brilliant array of guests, and we're always talking about, you know, Earth churning problems, and sometimes the shows can really get your guts in a knot. And then, but you know, just like Nick said, the answer is always within us. I've always found it really ironic that one of the best bits of wisdom I ever got from a movie was from a Muppet in Empire Strikes Back, where Yoda teaches that fear, anger, and aggression are the only enemies.
I liked Yoda.
So I was going to ask Nick about that funny blue squiggle spiral that was photographed near the Norwegian Array, right. But a couple of guests ago you started talking about music, which is much near and dear to my heart. So I was going to ask Nick about, specifically about intonation. Months ago, you guys had a guest on with one of the guest hosts, and he was talking about the 528 hertz frequency.
Yes.
And about how the Nazis were responsible for standardizing intonation.
That was Horowitz, Leonard Horowitz.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was the most life-changing show I ever heard, because it answered about 20 questions I've had since I was 20, and I'm not 20 anymore. you know, I tuned my guitar like the guy said, and, you know, he talked about how animals would respond to it. And I went out in the yard and started playing that 528 frequency, and I had 24 birds flying over my head digging it. I mean, it was insane. So I wanted to ask Nick specifically about, you know, you were talking about music and frequencies earlier, and if he knows anything about that, about how we change the intonation and what type of mind effects it might have.
There's a lot to be said for music and for sound specifically, and you can utilize it by binaural beat, which is for the very low frequencies below the threshold of human hearing. It was Monroe who was famous for the HemiSync series of CDs. And what his did is create hemispheric balance in both hemispheres and a beat frequency that would correspond to, say, 7 or 8 hertz in some cases and more complex signals in others, but to specifically affect the brain for deliberate behavior modification, whether it be accelerated learning, stop smoking, this kind of stuff. But what music, you know, there's some different things about music that I find really interesting. And the geometrics in music as sound waves overlap, and you get geometric shapes in three-dimensional space, and certain geometries have a biological effect, if you will. And so when you start thinking about music and sound and what sound really represents, it's a vibrational signal, obviously, but there's a lot of ways to carry a signal and create either a pulse modulation out of something else so you can get the same frequency, pulse rate, but instead of sound, maybe you're using electromagnetic fields that are pulsing or light that's flickering or a number of things. But these things create an entrainment or a resonance in certain aspects of the body, and that's the sort of the key to healing. The first chapter of Controlling the Human Mind kind of bridges the biology with the electronics in a way that most people can get it, and it's written carefully, and it might take a couple of reads, because it took 30 years to figure out how to write. But I can tell you the correspondence of sound, of light, of any vibrational signal in terms of what it can do is pretty profound. And I think that's kind of a rediscovery of going back to one of the earlier callers. A lot of ancient knowledge told us this. We're relearning some of this. And tone and intonation has a huge effect in terms of how you perceive things. Think about, again, just the emotional effect of just simple but elegantly constructed music, all coming out of that same creative place and demonstrating geometries that are profoundly similar throughout the arts. And now we call them fractals, and we call them sacred geometry, call them a lot of different things.
Okay, perfect. Let's go next to our first-time caller, Skip, in Anaheim, California. Hi, Skip.
Yeah, hi. Hi, George. Hi, Nick. I just wanted to talk about in regards to...
You forgot. You were on hold so long.
Yeah, exactly. What's his name?
Give me a hint, and I'll help you. Where do you want to go with them?
He created the vibrations in the earth. He was able to...
Nikola Tesla.
Exactly. And he was able to do different things in regards to... create buildings, vibrate, things like that.
Tesla did that as well as not just in terms of Earth movement. You know, there was a big story about him attaching a oscillator to a steel beam in New York, and it caused glass to shatter and an earthquake to be created. And there's another story about him using a different kind of oscillator with one of his friends, who was who we know as Mark Twain, and it actually affected him on an emotional level. They had something that would affect your emotional state, but it also had a side effect. In that case, you'd lose your bowels, which was a little bit uncomfortable, I guess, for Mark Twain.
I think so.
But the point is, you know, even that's over 100 years ago. You know, this is a old knowledge, you know, in terms of oscillations. And if you look at all of Tesla's patents, and I have them here on the shelf, as well as all of his written papers, and I can tell you, all of his science was about oscillating electromagnetic fields, all of it. If you look at it from the invention of a radio-controlled boat in Central Park before radio was theoretically invented by Marconi, it was Tesla who invented that and demonstrates, again, oscillating fields. And you look through from AC current and what it represents in oscillating fields, all of it was about that. That was Tesla's genius, and he looked at the entire creation as an oscillation of fields and interacting fields that created matter, if you will. And on some level, that's how I think he saw the picture. And so he affected matter with on an energetic level, or sought to, and then sought to use matter as the medium for transferring energy.
What would Tesla say about HARP today, Nick?
Oh, I think he would be obviously impressed with the scale and science, because it's, you know, it would be pretty amazing. But I think at the same time, because he had a very strong sense of goodwill in terms of humanity and the role of science, I think he would have been an advocate for care as well. I mean, he did some radical things in his time, but with the technology of today, I think he would have been advocating for a slow-go approach. And his kind of genius is exactly the kind of genius that I believe resides on the planet today. It's a matter of, it's going to be discovered. Someone's going to do these things. They're going to do amazing things in our lifetimes. And let's make sure they drift a little different direction. And in the spirit of what Tesla was hoping for, maybe we can see a different direction for mankind with the technologies.
Let's go to Montreal. Dan's with us on the international line. Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning, George and Dr. Baggage. Excuse me for using the speaker, but I'm suffering an inner ear infection, and I can't put the receiver to my ear.
Okay.
All right.
We'll get by. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. You passed over briefly the MKUltra's use of unwitting guinea pigs in the use of LSD, and I'd just like to say that here in Montreal, I was actually one of those guinea pigs, because the MKUltra came to Montreal
right
at the Allen Memorial Institute under the directorship of Donald Cameron, I believe.
That's correct.
And I got into that trap, and I would just like to bear testimony as to the horror and the evilness that that I was put through, and I can't believe that in the name of science and advancing civilization, such an atrocity was allowed to proceed.
You know, I appreciate the call. And, you know, in fact, CBC on a show called Undercurrents a number of years ago interviewed me and a number of other people on that very subject. And it was the Canadian government at least took some action, more than the U.S. certainly did. And the other thing that, you know, sort of comes of that is we have to think about in the context of sort of the last political regime in the United States, who believed that the Constitution was suspended at the U.S. border. And that's why we did the travel for torture program, you know, to the third world. Well, we export a lot of our sinister science as well into these dictatorships that we end up forming alliances with. And that's something we need to keep in mind as Americans. We're funding that. We have a responsibility here. We have a responsibility to the rest of this planet to make sure our science and our tax dollars aren't used for the very things that most of us in good conscience would oppose.
Oh, good point. Okay, next up, let's go one or two more calls. Dean in Racine, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, I'll just try to make this fast. Thanks, guys, for putting me on. I used to deer hunt up in the middle of Wisconsin, and there's one of those low-frequency deals there.
Right.
I was on a hill in a mountainy kind of hilly area. And the sound, I was in a big earthquake in California, and the only thing I can equate was the same kind of thing. It sounded like it was omnipresent, like it was actually coming out of me. I heard this guy yell at me first and took a couple shots in my direction, but I couldn't understand what he was saying. And then this noise was identical. If you had like a metal top desk and took a good-sized ball bearing and dropped it, it went tick, 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 tick. It did that like three times, and when it did that, all the animals fell completely silent. It seemed to get brighter outside, even though it was like 9 in the morning. It was total no clouds, daylight. It was brighter. This thing, it made the hair on me stand up. It spooked me. So I got out of there. But anyways, the strange thing about this, it's called forest cropland. The people, I just by chance happened to meet them the day earlier that used to have the farm. They said a banker and the government came out and offered them a deal, where they don't live there, they don't do nothing there, and every 25 years, for 25 years, they don't have to pay taxes, but every 25 years, they have to re-sign an agreement.
Hmm.
Well, anyways, long story short, soon after that now, my legs look like they're made out of wax. They're swelled up three times their normal size. It's agonizing. They're red and purple. My teeth have all just about fell out. The VA won't do nothing to help me on it. They just, like, mums, they won't even explain to me what's going on. So I don't know. It's all assumption, you know. I'm not some nut, wacko, whatever. Total assumption. I had to pull five teeth myself with the pliers.
Oh, my God.
I don't have a lot of money. No fun at all. But what you got to do, what you got to do. That's just to let you know how tenacious I am. You know, I don't know who to talk about this to or whatever. Who knows what's going to come up next, you know. But that noise, it just tick, 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 just like ball bearings. And now another thing was really weird. Normally you can't see this, but that night you could see the Borealis or whatever, you know, that the lights up north in the sky. You could see them clearly from my campsite.
Well, here's my thoughts on that is, you know, I'm not sure what you experienced. I can tell you the only thing I know of in Wisconsin goes back to the old ELF signal generators for, you know, again, communication with submarines. And those can be, you know, those are very long wavelengths. But I just don't know what you were impacted by. But,
It's out there. There's something out there, Nick. Yeah.
Beyond me on what that might be.
What's the next evolution? What are they working on that the public obviously doesn't know?
Well, you know, there's, I think this whole human brain modeling is really the big deal right now. It's trying to get a full sense of what, you know, how elastic is it? How much of it can we measure and at what high of a resolution? And so you need huge computing power, which, you know, that's the real big leap is when you start to think about what the human brain does, supercomputing, the idea of supercomputing, where you could take, as an example, and I've used this before, 6.6 billion people with hand calculators for 60 hours equal what a supercomputer today does in a second.
Isn't that amazing?
And the quantum computers will do what our supercomputers do in a trillion years in 1 hour. That's where the leap will happen. The quantum computer, as it manifests itself on the planet, someone will solve the underlying problems. But when we hit that level of computing power, then you'll be able to crack every single security code in the world in like an hour.
And they're going to do it. Nick, we're out of time. Your website, earthpulse.com. And thanks for everything you do, my friend.
Hey, thank you for having me. Thank you for the wide-ranging topics of the night. That was great.
Absolutely. Nick Begich, he's the best. He is the best. You get up to Alaska. Try to peek around and find HAARP. Even though they won't let you in, there are no more tours out there. For Dan Galante, Tom Tannhauser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.